You're listening to a new episode of Monopsony Podcast. So today's episode comes from a specific story I came, and this is real interesting. Well, it was not real interesting, but this happened. I got an internet ad that came to me for White Castle. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with what White Castle is a hamburger chain in the United States, one of the oldest, and incidentally, I know they use the highest grade beef of any of the fast food chains, so word up, way to go, White Castle. But White Castle is not known for its great burgers in the traditional sense. They're known for their tiny burgers that you can eat, well, a lot of, so you don't order one, you order like seven, and they're steamed with these onions, and they're very specific as to you have to really like White Castle burgers. Additional point about White Castle is that they're open late. And I don't mean late as in 11 p.m. I mean White Castle's open 24 hours. They're usually open at 3 in the morning. If you're not at a White Castle at 3 in the morning, you're not doing White Castle correctly. Now, it isn't strange that I would be getting advertising from White Castle. I've obviously been to a White Castle at 3 in the morning multiple times. Weird stories. It's fun. But what is strange is that White Castle was telling me months in advance that they were taking applications for their Valentine's exclusive. I want to repeat that. White Castle was trying to convince me that other people were going to sign up to have their Valentine's dinners with their lovers at White Castle, and that if I didn't sign up soon, all the places would be gone. White Castle. For Valentine's Day. I couldn't think of anything stranger. Part of me wanted to do it at that point, just to say, baby, we're going to White Castle, let's do this, Valentine's Day, I love you. And then I thought better of that, given, you know, Mrs. Monopsony Podcast's choice. However, it did bring me to today's topic, and today's topic is lover branding. That sound you hear is me cracking open a grapefruit Chew High, which is my beverage of choice for today's recording. Chew High, if you've never had one before, is kind of a Japanese cocktail in a can, in this case a grapefruit cocktail in a can, and I'm going to enjoy it while I discuss lover branding on today's episode. If you have a chance, and you are of course of legal age, please enjoy a Chew High, grapefruit, or otherwise. That Chew High is delicious. Now, interesting the point I want to start getting to lover branding. I'm going to start lover branding this particular Chew High. What does it mean to lover brand? Chew High, in this case for me, I have to talk about the actual, I'm going to go in a hedonism sense here, which is part of a lover branding. Chew High is bubbly. It has that effervescence you can feel. It takes place when you want it, when you're at night and you're going to make sure you calm down at the end of a long day, cracking open a Chew High to relax and know that you're home. I say those things because really when anything, any brand, any product puts the experience, and I mean the sensual experience in front of you, the touch, the feel of cotton, they do that, they're basically making themselves a lover brand. Anytime you're talking about how sensual that ice cream is, how smooth, how creamy, how rich the chocolate is, how dark. Those are all constant ways that people talk about kind of the hedonism excess elements of lover branding. And so this Chew High, grapefruity, is going to be the particular lover of choice for the episode. So what makes a lover brand? As part of research, before I went and just spouted off, I went to about seven different ad agency websites that deal in archetypal branding. And these were some of the ways that they talk about lover branding. So one of them says that all lover brands promise to make the love makes the world go round. So if you love something, that's the core motivation for doing X. If you love steak, that's why you eat this steak. If you love this car, that's why you choose X car. They declare that they have core desires of lover brands to maintain intimacy and their goal of being in a relationship with things that they love. Other ways they talk about it is, be in a relationship with people, help people connect with their desires and heart. These are the ways that archetype and lover brandings function. Another one represents it specifically as to be in a relationship with people, work, and surroundings they love, with a strategy of to become more and more physically and emotionally attractive. Key attributes include seeking true love, intimacy, sensuality, passionate, sexy, seductive, erotic, seeking pleasure, indulgence, following emotions without thinking. And they have these points where they say that if you are going to be a lover brand, so let's go make sure that you're saying you've chosen to become a lover brand, this is what you want to attain. You want to attain a lover relationship or a lover type relationship with your opposite part, whether it be the person buying your product or engaging with your services on a long-term basis. It can be running the gamut from everything from familial love, like father to son, mother to daughter, all of that, to far more erotic love if you want to get into dirty secrets after dark. All those things are also encompassing under lover branding. So this is back to my original story. Why does White Castle think that I want to be in a loving lover relationship with White Castle? It's not that I don't. I've enjoyed my times at White Castle. But I don't really want to date White Castle. The more that I think about it, it doesn't quite make sense for me. Now, obviously, we have to always understand that not all things are made for all consumers. So it is possible, and in fact highly likely in this case, true, that White Castle is just using their branding and I'm caught in the crossfire and, you know, I have no intention of dating White Castle. But there are people who do have intentions of dating White Castle. How would I know that? Well, I thought about their tagline. If anyone can remember what the tagline of White Castle is, I wouldn't expect everyone to know. The tagline of White Castle is, what you crave. What does that mean, what you crave? That means emotionally uninhibited desire. What you crave. Well, in this case, it's White Castle. It's not you made a rational decision to think about what I needed and what I was going to eat in terms of caloric intake and how it's going to affect my body. No. What you crave is White Castle. And that's a sensual experience. That's a lover relationship. And so White Castle has taken it to the next level. And they're offering a Valentine's deal at White Castle. For those that crave White Castle, you can have your lover relationship there. Now, obviously, I don't, and I'm far away from White Castle. But I like the chutzpah, White Castle. You have gone to the next stage. Now, when I went to the White Castle website, I found that they've taken it to another level here to understand the why of why they've done this. They understood and said, sometimes you just need to know where White Castle is, the nearest one to you, a la Harold and Kumar go to White Castle. Those guys were in love with White Castle. You know what they craved? White Castle. They didn't want other burgers. They didn't want to go to Hot Dog Haven. They wanted White Castle. A lover relationship if we can ever define one. But when you go to the website, they have the nearest White Castle locator part. So if you anywhere in the world want to find out where's the nearest White Castle, you can never be too far away. Now, obviously, I'm living in Malaysia, and for all my Malaysian fans, you should know there aren't any White Castle anywhere near. But that doesn't mean we can't search and find out that people know that you want to have White Castle somewhere in Malaysia. An intriguing proposition that this structurally within their website, they've put up that you're, you know, man seeking White Castle is what they have up there, or woman seeking White Castle, as the case may be. So if we had to analyze White Castle's tactics here, why would they choose to become a lover brand? There's no reason specifically they have to be a lover brand. There are other kinds of fast food restaurants out there that are competing on other factors. Healthy lifestyles, you know, convenience, fast food on the go, family. Lots of reasons and ways you can compete. Why choose a lover brand? Well, for White Castle and for most others, when we think about this intentionally, I have to go back to market, and I have to go back to the essentials of business. Price times volume. Price times volume equals revenue. Revenue minus cost equals profit. Standard math. If you knew that you were competing with other choices for burgers, and there's a lot of other choices for burgers around the world and specifically in the United States, there's lots and lots and lots of choices for burgers. Why choose White Castle? Are they the biggest burgers? No. Are they the tastiest burgers. Not to me, but certainly other people crave them, so that's a different point there. Are they the cheapest burgers? I guess they are burger per burger, but, you know, in general points, no, they're about the same price as everywhere else. What is the differentiating factor? White Castle has settled on the fact that they actually compete on long-term value. They basically say, once a person has a White Castle, they're going to come back. More often. More often again. And again, the people who come to White Castle are loyal customers. They're competing on loyalty, basically. So if I go to a McDonald's, I guess they expect me to go back to a McDonald's. Again, I haven't actually been to a McDonald's in years, but that's a personal preference thing. Other people will only go to McDonald's and have some loyalty. The loyalty they're trying to inspire within White Castle, though, is another level. They know they have less customers in terms of less branches and everything else, but they inspire that loyalty. That's how they're staying in the business game. They're basically saying price, being all things equal, times volume. Now, volume is affected by both short-term and long-term value. Every time you get a customer in the door, how much do they buy, and how often do they come in the door? All things being equal, they're going to buy about the same amount they did the time before, though maybe a little more because they might get a Crave case or something like that. But they're going to come in more often. If you came in at 3 in the morning once, I bet in 3 months you might come and get it again at 3 in the morning. It's one of those habitual things that they're trying to set up. That's the lover relationship they want. So strategically, it makes sense for White Castle to not necessarily compete with the other brands. But when you go there and when you're cheating on your White Castle girlfriend, it's not like that. It's just that you return every once in a while and renew that relationship that you know you have with them. So having understood why to choose the lover brand, at least for the case of White Castle, what are the ways we can tell someone is or some product is displaying lover brand tendencies? There are lots of ways they do it. What they look like, what they say, what icons they use. There's just a bunch of ways that lover brands try to keep your attention. And we should go over some of them here so you can think about strategically what you can recognize one. Now, when you recognize one, it doesn't mean you have to automatically be jaded. I have all kinds of lover brands that I interact with all the time, as do everyone else generally that exists in a capitalist society. But what's important is just that it's fun to realize what they're doing and why they're doing it. Not so much that you can poke fun at them, though I do poke fun at lover brands that I see that are doing things badly, or lover brands that are not necessarily trying to appeal to me, but are trying to appeal to other kinds of lovers. I'm that way, but it is something that we can all be aware of. So right off the bat, visually, you might notice that something is a lover brand based on its font selection and its color. It's really oftentimes you'll see lover brands who are going towards oranges, pinks, and reds, and maybe sometimes those light purples, depending on. Well, why is that? It's because those are the colors of cognitive emotion in this case. So Valentine's hearts are red. Oranges try to get your attention that way. Purples, light purples, are trying to put you in the mood for romantic involvement. That's a pretty standard way, a color palette that you would see for lover branding. Darker colors, dark reds, blacks, anything that can get you into that mood without necessarily putting you into a happy space that isn't romantic. So you don't see a lot of yellow lover brands, blue lover brands, green lover brands, none of that. You'll see oranges and purples, blacks, reds. Those are all the kinds of colors of lover brands. Pinks are huge. Those are the kind of things you would iconically see. So if you are looking at their actual materials, their color can be kind of a giveaway. You will see those plays go forward. Now the fonts, the more frilly the font, honestly, the more of a lover brand it is. If it looks like Beethoven's girlfriend wrote a letter that said Immortal Beloved and signed it herself in the font, well, you can better believe that's a lover brand font. So the more curly Q's and the more squiggle points you can make to make it almost look like it's handwritten, those are ways you see it. Again, very hammer over the head, but if they do dot their I's with hearts, that kind of thing, they're clearly a lover brand. That's fine. They can do that. And so font choice does go into some way to recognizing right away. Obviously, there are companies and there are things out there that just want to be in that love zone, and they're over the head with it. Valentine's Day, all over the place with lover branding, chocolates, that kind of thing. In terms of visuals, the first and most ubiquitous part of a lover brand is hearts. If there's a heart involved, it's 99% of the time a lover brand. But there are other ways that they will see visually that they are a lover brand. Again, perfumes, lingerie, Victoria's Secret. If a beautiful woman or a beautiful man is staring you in the eyes with a sultry smile, that's a lover brand. They're not even saying anything. They're just looking in your soul. And that's a lover brand. That's what they want. They want you to understand that this is for sensual times, loving times. And so they don't have to even say anything in those particular cases. Iconically, there are other ways you can get to lover branding. If it's familial lover branding between, you know, mothers and children, their children, fathers and their children, it can be acts that you would see, carving the Thanksgiving turkey, being together, sharing, being part of a wholesome relationship, that kind of thing. That's part of the branding there. When you see couples together, again, this is a very strange, but Viagra used to do, or does, still does to some part, does do lover branding. Who knows why? Oh, we all know why. But they would put, you know, older couples holding hands while they're in bathtubs that are looking out over a sunset. Well, that's a lover branding. They know that Viagra in that case is the secret lover that makes, you know, sparks fly. But that's the idea. The idea is that there's a relationship there between you and your Viagra and your wife or your girlfriend or whoever else that works. That's all part of the lover branding iconography. If you want to get into it linguistically, again, if they just say love, that's a pretty clear set. But they also will do things like slow motion talking, or they'll be starting to use shadows and things like that. So slow motion, you came home from a hard day, and what's in the fridge? Mom's leftover meatloaf. Yeah. That kind of thing. Where it turns out you might actually have a loving relationship with whatever food is in there that is the thing you wanted the most, what you craved. If you see food being displayed in slow-mo, it's a good bet that it's a lover brand. If your ice cream is telling you that it's a sinful secret after dark, you can best believe that's a lover brand. If it's chocolate, dark chocolate after dark, that's also a lover brand. If they tell you not to tell your friends or to tell your other girlfriends or to tell your husbands, that's secret lover branding, where they wouldn't want you to get in trouble because it's going to play right to their hands. Again, lover brand. So just to make sure you really do realize how many lover brands are out there, I'm just going to list a few that go off the top. If you've ever had any interactions with any of these brands, you can know what lover brands actually stand for or what they do. Chanel, classic lover brand. Hallmark, lover brand. Hardee's does lover branding. Obviously, White Castle, we talked about them. Cotton, the touch, the feel of cotton. Godiva, chocolate. They're everywhere. So now that we know what the lover brands are doing, how to recognize what they are, what can we learn from them? Why would I want to imitate them? How could I? And what's the benefit of being so? What are the risks of being a lover brand? All right, well, the first thing to know, if we're going to imitate them, what goes well? Imitating a lover brand, honestly, isn't that hard. It is hard to be successful at it, but it's not hard to imitate it. You have to be authentic if you want to be successful at it. You have to honestly love your customers, love the people that you're going to work with, and know them with enough empathy to appeal to what will make them want to be with you and no one else. It's not so much that you know their name and you know their birthday. Did you do the little things that make the relationship special? When you opened up the box of the ice cream, was there a joke just for them that you put there? When they ordered on the online catalog, did you put a handwritten note in the box with the new sweater? All those little things add up, bit by bit, to your brand. And so, it's a matter of walking the walk to actually establish yourself as a lover brand. Sure, you can just put yourself out there and have small bits of it, hearts, flowery font, but it isn't enough to make that relationship between you and them. And that's the goal of any lover brand. Now, the real question becomes, why would you choose to be a lover brand if you could be any other kind of brand in your market? There are reasons to do it. It's just a question of saying what works for you in your company, product, service, and what doesn't, and what market are you in? Well, one of the biggest benefits of being a lover brand is long-term value. Those people that choose your brand stick with you longer. That's the entire goal of being a lover brand. And if they do, A, you can charge higher prices because the pricing isn't then, you know, settled on price point. Nobody goes to their girlfriend or boyfriend and says, yeah, I'd like to get 5 dates for the price of 6. Or 6 dates for the price of 5. Sorry. No one does that. You don't bundle dates. You don't ask for discounts. It's just not how it's done. That relationship is important. And so you can charge whatever price feels your value without having to quibble with your extended lovers, in this case, or extended relationships. And that's really important for a brand. If you're going to be competing in a market with many competitors, with multiple choices, long-term value can really matter. You might not be able to compete, actually, on the other factors here, but if they trust you and they want to work with you, that can keep them from churning over. Basically, you're not losing customers to other parts of the market. If switching costs are low, lover branding is a good way to go. If it seems that there's many other options, lover branding might be the good way to go. High switching costs or low switching costs, doesn't matter. So that's part of the appeal economically of being a lover brand. You can have that relationship. It's also highly, shall we say, strong. Once it's established, it's really hard to break. You have to do a good deal of damage to break the relationship, if you keep trying, that is. And so, as long as you're willing to put in the work, the people still stick around, your customers still stick around, and lover branding can be the right choice for you. All right, last sip of the Chew High right here. And that concludes the episode on lover branding. Thank you for listening with me today. As always, you can join in on the conversation through emailing at monopsonypodcast@gmail.com, following us on Twitter, onebuyerpodcast at Twitter, and on Patreon if you wish to contribute to the show. We'll see you next episode.